This is Invest Talk, above average investing for the average investor. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. And now, here's KPP Financial Executive Vice President, Money Manager Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our January 6th, 2015 edition of Invest Talk. And the title of today's show is Trends That Could Impact Your 2015. And I welcome all of you that are listening online via investtalk.com, our listeners in California, and those listening via podcast or any other way you might hear our show. Maybe probably after hours. If you are listening to us live, you can call and get your question answered. 888-99-CHART is the number to get your call through and ask whatever you want when it comes to money, and hopefully we can help you out. Now, as always, we welcome everybody who is, whether you're a beginner or experienced investor. It does not matter. We want to hear from you, and we thank you for spending this hour with us. And we really want to hear from you. You are a part of the show. It's not just me. It's not just Steve. It's not just our producers. It's really about you and finding ways to help you make better investment decisions. Now, in a new year, is always an occasion to compile as much wisdom as we can muster and wax philosophical about, you know, think philosophically about our endeavors going forward, and investing is no exception. And like so many things we do, our investing could go a lot better if we truly learned from our mistakes. Now, one mistake that is commonly made is buying good companies at the wrong time. There's a question for you. Can you make a bad investment in a good company? If you look back at the history of Apple and Adobe, if you loaded up on Apple stock about the time of the boardroom coup that ousted founder Steve Jobs for a while and then sold it in a panic, you probably sold it at a deep discount. And looking back at when Adobe went public, there was an opportunity for big losses there. If you acted like a trader and not an investor, I was talking about this last week, and instead of investing, you're speculating. You're reacting with your gut instead of your brain. And of course, both companies are doing well today. And unlike so many tech startups from back in the dot-com bubble, a lot of them went under. So really, you should have hung on to those good companies. The fact remains, as Dan McSwain put it in the San Diego Union-Tribune, even great companies won't make a dime for investors who pay too much for them. There's still many companies that the dot-com bubble were trading at astronomical prices. Even Microsoft, you know, if you had dividends and stuff, you make back all your money. But Microsoft, split adjusted and everything, had a high of about a little less than $60. $59.97 was the high. It's at $45.65. Is Microsoft a bad company? No, not at all. Yeah, those people just bought it at the wrong time. So, understanding values is just as important as finding good companies. Now, we want to hear from you. Don't be shy. Share your mistakes with us. Everybody can learn from them. Take one for the team, maybe. Give us a call. Let's get to the phones now. Get your voice in the mix. Here's a call, a live call, actually. Let's go to John in Walnut Creek. How you doing, John?
Hi, Justin. Thank you very much for taking my call. You guys have a great program.
I appreciate you calling in.
I have a question about inverse leveraged ETFs. Mm-hmm. I've heard on your show you talk about how there's a tracking error involved with these and that they're not good for long term.
Yep.
Would that tracking error also occur? I mean, if you bought an ETF and it goes way down because you've held it for a long time because it's not tracking it, can it also occur on the flip side, going up as this sector that you're betting on is increasing and improving? You're actually getting the tracking error to occur in your favor, so you're making actually more than what it's tracking?
Yeah, this actually does happen. It's not nearly as powerful as the tracking error to the downside. But when you do get a quick move in the markets, or a steady move, let's say that, maybe say you're short the market, maybe you have SDS, right, which is the double short the S&P. You know, back in 2007 at the peak, it hit a low of split adjusted, it's $165 a share, and then at a high it went up to 450. Let's see, high of 472. So it went up well over 100%, right? But the market, you know, you think, well, the market would have to go down 60%. Well, the market didn't go down 60%. It only went down roughly 50%. So, you know, there was some positive tracking error there. But, you know, over time, it's, like I said, it's more powerful to the downside. But it can work in your favor if you get a trend, and the trend is very important.
So if there's, like, a trend in, like, the, you know, the, like TBT, those the short-term treasuries, so would, as the interest rates gradually go up and you're in one of those leveraged ETFs, then it's, the trend is going up and it'll track towards your favor in the positive direction?
Yeah, it can, but like I said, it's not as powerful. And on the bond side, you know, there's not, I think that's probably where the big, where a lot of tracking error happens, because you have so many days and there's not a lot of movement. And so you get that kind of daily tracking error, kind of more grinding moves as opposed to, you know, strong, steady movements, like in a strong, steady trend. And so you might be a little bit less in TBT, but yes, you can get that tracking error in your favor. Doesn't mean it's, you know, something great that you should be holding long term, but yeah, if you're trying to take advantage of a trend that you think is going to persist for 6, 9, 10, you know, months to maybe a year and a half at the most, then yeah, those leverage ones can really, really goose your performance. But you know, if it goes against you, they really hurt you.
Okay, thank you very much.
No problem, John. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Don in Redwood City. How you doing, Don?
Hi. Thank you, Dustin. Just a quick question. I just wonder if you could generally comment on what you thought was going on with the markets this week, and particularly with reports coming out end of the week, and if this might be, speaking of Apple, a good time to pick up Apple or a stock like Macy's, which I just picked up today, rightly or wrongly. Just wonder if you could comment on whether this is a good time to go shopping.
Well, what's your time horizon? Are you thinking, you know, long term, or are you thinking, you know, that we're close to the bottom and, you know, you're doing this for trade?
For Apple, I'm thinking long-term. For Macy's, I was thinking short-term trade.
Yeah, Macy's is a pretty, it's been doing well. A lot better than I expect, and the trend is strong, and even this pullback hasn't really been that dramatic. So, you know, I like Macy's from a technical perspective. It looks pretty good. From a fundamental perspective, let me take a quick look. Bring it up here real quick. You know, revenues aren't really changing much. They're kind of going between positive 2% and negative 2% revenue growth over the past couple years. But earnings are really starting to pick up. Do you know why that is?
I do not. No,
you
sir.
Don't? Yeah, I haven't really looked into that. But, you know, I think Macy's is a trade and make that and to ride that trend. Not a bad way to go. Apple, to be frank, we're actually looking to reduce our position in Apple. Not that we don't like it. It's just we think a lot of the run is kind of in it. Long term, I think it's still a great company. But, you know, I think it's from our research, it looks like they're having some bugs in their software. They're not putting as much money into R&D as they probably should, and they're putting more money in stock buybacks, which is one thing I'm going to talk about coming up. And that worries us a little bit. You know, not that I think longer term that they're not going to figure it out and be a great company and grow earnings. I think they will. But I'm in the camp right now of more cutting back Apple. And I would like to buy Apple, you know, maybe back increase the position back up when it gets back below 100, you know, $90 a share. Those are the areas that I would be more aggressive getting into Apple.
Thank you. And do you see this week as just being kind of, you know, Europe volatility or?
This is a lot of Europe. I think some Europe volatility. There's obviously worries going on in the oil patch. Oil is now below $50 a barrel, which I don't think anybody expected. It's going to decimate the shale industry, at least in the near term. I think we are actually going to bounce. I think we'll probably bounce for the next week, and I think we'll probably continue the sell-off later in the month. So I think there's, like I said, going to continue be some worries, but expect a lot more volatility in 2015 than you saw in 2014.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. Thanks for calling, Don. Now, 2014 saw significant changes in the investment landscape. How will those shape what you do in 2015? Trends that could impact your 2015. I'm going to go over what Goldman Sachs thinks is going to happen in 2015. And let me give you a little hint. They think it's pretty much status quo, which is kind of the safe bet. I disagree with them, which I usually do with Goldman Sachs. I think there's last year is going to be. It's going to look very different than this year. You're going to go, wow, 2014 was kind of benign, and there was a lot of worries, and I think a lot of those worries are going to come to head this year, and there's going to create a lot of volatility, but I think also a lot of buying opportunities as well as the year progresses. So we're going to talk about that coming up, but I also have some other talking points that I want to discuss. One is about Apple, like I said before. Are they under-investing in their future? Talking about R&D spending, I want to touch on that because I think it's important. And not to scare anyone away from Apple, but I think they really need to refocus on what they've been doing well, on their product base, which granted they do spend a lot on R&D, but relative to their revenue base, they actually don't compared to their competitors. So we're going to talk about that. And then the strong dollar, and it seems like strong dollar would be great, right? It's usually a sign of strong economic health, and it makes our lives easier. We're going to go travel abroad and makes things cheaper, like oil, right? Well, that's great for most people, but for a lot of companies, it's not so great. A lot of multinational companies. And which companies are those? All right, so we're going to talk about that. And then maybe a few more things. How the bear market in crude oil has polluted non-energy stocks. Why is it spreading into other areas of the market? And then Greece's election comes up at the end of the month, and I think 25th of January. And it's going to be very important, I think, for the market and what's going on in the euro and how they may be able to avoid problems there. And then I have two questions that were emailed to us that are going to get answered as well. We appreciate our podcasters, and just because you listen at off hours doesn't mean you can't be on the program. InvestTalk is produced live every weekday, 4 to 5 Pacific time. And if you can, then you can, if you can listen, then you can talk to us at 888-99-CHART. Help share whatever topic it is on your mind. Weigh in and bring your questions and ideas. I am Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and this is InvestTalk.
Here are the directions for reaching Steve this afternoon with your question. Just call 888-99-CHART, C-H-A-R-T. Have a question about how best to get into the market? Or maybe you're feeling unsure about your current investments. That's what this is all about. This is InvestTalk.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. 10 investment trends for 2015. Now, this is time of year that a lot of the big banks come out with their forecast for 2015, and forecasting is notoriously very hard. And Goldman Sachs is one of the first out, and they're spelling out some key macro themes and their outlook for asset classes over the next 12 months. Now I'm going to go to their summary and give you a broad swath of what they're thinking. And then I'll get into it more in depth later in the show. Now, Goldman still thinks equity yields look better especially in compared to emerging markets, right? Equity returns compared to most other asset classes like bonds. And they think the market outlook overall is quite benign. But under the surface, it is striking that many asset classes are priced to offer low absolute rates of return over the coming years. So they really don't expect, they kind of expect status quo. Not a great year, not a bad year, kind of a ho-hum year. And they don't think volatility is going to actually creep up. They don't. They still think that markets have room to move higher, but they don't see them being able to move much higher. All right. And they see better returns out of Japan and Europe especially. So we're going to talk about that coming up on the show a little bit later and what I agree with and maybe disagree with. Now we want to hear your questions. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278 is how to reach us right now with your money topic on InvestTalk.
We thank you for subscribing to our podcast. Steve and Justin want you to know that you can think of them as a ready resource for answers. They devote a portion of their day to communicating with our listeners, answering their questions. The idea is to give you tools to make better decisions about your money. If you have a question that you'd like answered directly, maybe you don't want to ask it on the podcast, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin, and they'll get back to you.
Let's take a quick look at the markets today. The S&P closed down 18 points, the Dow down 130, and the NASDAQ down about 60 points. Not a good day on the markets, and this was the fifth day in a row the S&P was down on the day. And it's on the back, like I said before, of what's going on in Greece, lower oil prices, and how that's going to really feed into other areas of the market. This isn't just an oil story. There are other areas of the market that are likely to have some issues. That the root cause comes from the oil industry and you know, stronger dollar with weaker earnings growth expected, I think, going forward. There's a lot going on and with Russia, problems in Russia and their financial situation with lower oil prices and the 50% drop in the ruble. Then you have Venezuela, and they're having problems with lower oil prices. Even some companies, some airlines are cutting off their service to Venezuela because they're having trouble with foreign currency and translating that back. And so there's just an increase in volatility. We had a lack of volatility last year up until about October, and you start in December a little bit, and it's creeping back up. Now, I think short-term, it's probably going to dissipate in the short term, but I don't think the market's going to get through 2015 unscathed without some sort of a pullback. Now the big question is, how does the Fed react? How do the problems become? What do they call it? Not systematic. There you go. Systematic. Do the problems become systematic where, remember the subprime problem? Remember the subprime problem in 07? Everyone said, oh, it's contained and, you know, it's just a small portion of the lending market and it's not a big deal. Well, it was clearly a big deal. And now the big question I think that's looming on everyone's mind when it comes to the debt markets. Remember, the debt markets are the most important thing that you can think of. The debt markets, the cycles in the debt market are just simply the cycles in our equity markets, in our economic cycles. If we don't have flowing credit, that means business doesn't get done or less business gets done, which causes less sales, less earnings, and then it feeds on itself and everything kind of goes to hell in a handbasket, right? If you have a good debt market, well, credit is flowing easily. You can go out and borrow if you need it. And you want to go do something, you want to make a purchase or an acquisition or you, whatever you want to do, you can do it, and that creates economic activity and it feeds on itself. So the big question now is oil. Oil is now below $50 a barrel. There's tons and tons, about $1.6 trillion in energy-related, remember, energy-related companies. $1.6 trillion. Now, subprime is $1.3 trillion. Now, I'm not saying that it's as bad, because a lot of that $1.6 trillion is ExxonMobil and Chevron and, you know, companies that at $50 a barrel, they're still profitable. They can still service their debt. It's not an issue. Shale oil is about $200 billion in debt. That is where you have big issues, potential big issues. And I think that's what the market is starting to worry about, and I think down the line you're going to see a lot more defaults than are expected now. Now, you drive the discussion with your question. We want to help fill in the blanks, and you can reach us anytime a question pops into your head. 888-99-CHART is how to do it at any time.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. This is Frank calling from Walnut Creek. I listen to you on 1220, and my question today is regarding China Mobile. Symbol CHL. I'd like to have you take a look at it and give us what your opinion is of it. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
All right, I was looking at China Mobile. This is the largest mobile phone operator in the world. Hong Kong-based provider of digital wireless voice and data services to, get this, 767 million customers in China and Hong Kong. 767 million customers. That's a lot of customers. It yields about 3.2%. Revenues are growing, but earnings are falling. Revenues are growing about 5% year over year last quarter. Earnings are supposed to decline 15% in 2014 and 1% in 2015. I'm not a big fan of it. Really not a big fan. I just don't like the earnings growth trajectory. It's not super expensive, but it's also not super cheap either. The nice 3.2% dividend is great, but you know the problems in China. You know, I think there's probably more downside than upside, and I think that can feed into a name like China Mobile. Even though they're huge and large, and they're still going to be profitable, I don't think this is the right time to be getting into it. It's making lower highs and lower lows on the chart, and I would stay away from it for now. I'm Portfolio Manager Justin Klein, and I'm here to answer your money questions. You can reach me right now. We are live, 4 to 5 Pacific Time. Give us a call if you'd like at 888-99-CHART. Let's talk quickly about the stronger dollar. Stronger dollar, and I talked a little bit earlier about how the stronger dollar is usually viewed as a good thing. Seems like a good thing, right? It's a sign of economic health, and it makes our dollar abroad more valuable and allows us to buy things cheaper and travel cheaper and things like that. But the issue when it comes to a lot of multinational companies is that it really hurts their earnings, because they have to translate those currencies that they're doing business abroad in, which in a lot of cases is extensive, back into dollars. And guess what? Because that other currency is worth less, they get less dollars coming back. And that hurts earnings. And some of the most iconic U.S. firms, including Coke, Johnson & Johnson, Mattel, have already mentioned that currency is becoming a headwind in their earnings calls last quarter. And since then, the dollar's rally has only continued. And Kathy Lean, a currency analyst at BK Asset Management, says you're going to see more earnings misses from American multinationals than positive surprises as a result of the dollar strength. And you've already seen some issues so far. One is Apple. Is look at Russia. Russia's ruble has fallen dramatically, 50% last year. And that forced them to shut down the online store in Russia in December to review pricing, and they blamed it on extreme fluctuations in the value of the ruble. Similarly, Venezuela's currency tumbled, and it's creating headaches for airlines trying to bring money back home. American, Delta, and United all cut back flights to the South American nation because of these issues. Now, a strong dollar also makes American exports and products look more expensive to the rest of the world. Big industrial manufacturers like Boeing and Caterpillar get hurt because their products are competing with others around the world, especially like in Europe and Germany. And think of, you know, the euro's been very weak. So a lot of the products from the likes of Germany are now more competitive than products here. And Germany is a great engineering and production nation, and they have a lot of great production, or, you know, great products. Now, who are the winners? Well, the winners mainly are domestic companies that only deal with the dollar. They don't really do much business in other currencies. And especially ones that import products abroad to build things or offer a service here in the United States. And the biggest shining example is Southwest Airlines. You know, they're only a domestic airline. They import fuel, right? Oil. And that's becoming much cheaper. And so that's helping them. So that's a good example. And that's a good overview of how currency can affect the companies you own, the broad market as a whole. Because remember, the market is paying, the S&P, the broad index, a lot of those companies are multinationals. And that's going to be a strong headwind to earnings going forward as long as the dollar stays strong. And on the back of that, let's take a quick look at a question from Henning. He wants to know my view on Caterpillar. He says he wants to look at Caterpillar as a future dividend stock. Has it got further to fall, or today's price a buying opportunity? And let's take a quick look at Caterpillar. It has fallen pretty decently from about $111 a share back in June, July time frame, and now it's at $86 a share. I would say this probably has further to fall. Where would I pick it up? That's the question. Where would I pick up Caterpillar? I wouldn't pick up Caterpillar until $70 a share. That's where I would start my purchase if you're looking to buy Caterpillar. Now, currently, let's look at it as a dividend play. Currently, it is yielding 3.2%. I think it's probably going to continue down. That yield will probably get above 4%. And at about $70 a share, that is when I'd pick you up. 80 maybe is the next level of support. $80 a share is the next level of support. But I think it'll probably be a short-term bounce. It'll probably get to 70. If we go into a real bad bear market, you know, high 50s is possible. But I would start your position at around $70 a share. So that was for Henning, who asked his question via Twitter. He tweeted to the handle at KPP Financial. Now let's get back to the phones. 8899-CHART is our number to get through and ask your question. Kurt called from Anaheim with his retirement account question.
I have an IRA that was set up by my mother-in-law for my wife. It's a Roth IRA. And we are not able to fund that. I was wondering if I can either roll that into a traditional IRA where we are more actively engaged, and or if I can't do that because it's a Roth IRA, can you have both a Roth IRA and a traditional IRA and fund both of them? Thank you.
Yes, you can fund both of them, but you never mix a Roth IRA and a regular IRA. Why is that? Well, a Roth IRA, you've already paid taxes on. All the money that's gone in there, you've paid taxes on. So you never have to pay taxes when you take it out. Right? Once you reach 59.5. I think he was saying it was for his mom's IRA? If it's his mom's IRA, if it's mom's IRA, then I'm assuming she's probably 59.5. She probably can take it out tax-free, so I would just do that. What else? What was the other question about? Oh, you don't want to mix it, because once you put it into the regular IRA, when you take it out, you got to pay taxes. You already pay taxes on the Roth IRA. So don't mix those. Don't mix those. And you can contribute to both. There are income limits, things like that, so you got to check with your accountant. But, yes, you can contribute to both at the same time. Let's go to Rob in Pleasanton. How you doing, Rob?
I'm good. How are you, Justin?
Doing great. What can I do for you?
Yeah, actually, I want to know, find out from you, what's your view on the gaming industry in general for next 2-3 years, and how about the symbol EA, Electronic Arts? How do you view it fundamentally and technically, given the run-up it has in last year?
Electronic Arts. This is a name that historically has its earnings have been, I don't say all over the board, but they have been somewhat volatile. But they've been getting to some solid earnings growth over the past and revenue growth over the past 2 quarters. I like that. They're a leader in the video game industry. They develop video game software and content for play on video game consoles, PCs, handheld platforms, and mobile phones. And I like that they're kind of everywhere. They don't just rely on one particular platform, right? There's a lot more games being played on phones and iPads and tablets and things like that. And they're on all that, and it's a lot easier to get their software. You don't have to go to the store. You just download it, and they get their cut. And so I like Electronic Arts. I think that's they're probably the best in the industry. Their fundamentals look good. Technically, it looks good. P is about 18, which is not dramatic. That's not crazy, I don't think. It is probably a little extended on a technical perspective. I think getting back into the low 40s would make me feel, and even the high 30s would make me feel more comfortable at picking up this name. I think it's extended here. Fundamentally, its earnings momentum is good. It's free cash flow is $1 billion a year. Its market cap is 14. Yeah, I mean, it's not cheap, but I wouldn't say it's crazy expensive either. So I like what you're looking at. I just would like a little bit more of a pullback here. And I think, if the market continues to have a sell-off, I think this will as well. So I like what you're looking at, and I would look to be getting in sometime by the middle part of the year.
Okay, cool. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Rob. Now start the new year off by getting your retirement portfolio in order. We have 2 new dates for portfolio reviews in Southern California. Steve will be in San Diego on January 13th and at our home office in Dana Point on January 15th. To save your hour, just go to investtalk.com, click on the schedule a meeting button. And if you're not in California, you're not in Southern California, you still want to meet with Steve, you still want to talk with him, we schedule appointments all the time. Steve has many phone calls every day lined up to talk to current clients and prospective clients to go over their portfolio and make sure they are on the right track. So we can do that via phone or Skype.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or Contact Justin on investtalk.com.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Let's talk a little bit about the oil industry. I know everyone's interested in it, but and everyone's asking, well, why is the market going down? I know oil's bad, but that's oil. Well, it spreads into other areas of the marketplace. And let me give you some examples. One, we all talk about, big companies like Halliburton, Transocean, Nabors Industries. These are big oil companies that are down 45% at least since oil peaked out in the middle of last year. But there are other companies that are feeling the heat, feeling the heat. And the first sector, area of the market that's really been on its heels is the regional banking industry. Regional banking industry. Because a lot of these banks have extended loans to oil companies, fracking, to do shale drilling, fracking, right? And Fifth Third Bank Corp, FITB, is one of the regional lenders that tried to chase the fracking boom. And it's down 12% since June 20th. And here's how the company's management described their rationale for launching a new national energy banking team 2 years ago. They said, quote, the energy sector is a rapidly growing industry. The new team demonstrates our commitment to providing dedicated banking services to this evolving sector. The oil and natural gas sector represents tremendous growth opportunity. Well, it is when that sector's doing great, and it ain't when it ain't, right? So they're not the only regional bank that's like this. You have Comerica, which is down about 14% since June. Hancock Holding Company down 19%. Cullen Frost Bankers down 16%. BOK Financial Corp down 13% and all this is since June 20th. Then you have Zion Bank Corp also down 13%. So all these regional banking companies, they usually more tied to business lending than, you know, like mortgage lending, right? Wells Fargo is more tied to business or mortgage lending than they are probably business lending. But these regional banks are really hurting. So that's how you're seeing that problem in the oil industry spread out a little bit. What else? You have other companies in industrial space, in the industrial space that sell pipes, valves, things that are used to pump oil and gas. You think of Fluor. Then you have Caterpillar, like we talked about earlier. Joy Global, Allegheny Technologies, Dover Corp, Jacobs Engineering, Quanta Services are all down more than 20% since oil peaked at almost $108 a barrel. So, you know, that there's, it spreads. It's not just one area. And then you have things like U.S. Steel. They warned of potential layoffs of 756 employees at two plants that stand to be hurt by lower spending by energy companies. And there are other names like Sprint, Agilent Technologies, Varian Medical, Carlyle Group. There are REITs, Real Estate Investment Trusts, that are going to be hit. So remember, when there's a lot less flow of cash flow into an area of the market, it can spread. Remember, those companies also do business with other industries, right? And so you have to understand how that could potentially spread and why the market is acting so funky. That's a good way to look at it. Now, do we have time for Invest Talk Personal? We don't? Okay. We don't have time. Well, after the break, I'm going to answer a question from Cha. And he was asking about U.S. Steel and AK Steel. Actually, I can answer it now. Don't buy them. Mainly because of the problems going in the oil industry. They're fundamentally hurting. And I think that's probably only going to continue. So I wouldn't buy them just yet. Now, you've heard us talk about our new 401k solution. If you'd like to know more about it, just go to investtalk.com and send a note to me, or you can just go to the investment section and click on the area where it says 401k solution. Now, you can tell your boss how you can save money and give employees a better.
Distribution of our podcast is made possible by KPP Financial. One way to get a handle on investment risk is to understand how much you're taking. Here's a handy tool that can help shed some light on that.
It's an easy-to-use risk analysis tool on InvestTalk.com. By answering just a handful of questions, it will tell you how much risk you're comfortable with. Try it. It's free.
Let's answer one more question before we're done with this hour. As usual, the number is 888-99-CHART. That's how to reach us anytime.
Hey, Steve and Justin, great show. This is Mark from Northern California, and I listened to you on the Internet. And I enjoyed the Fremont Conference. It was great long-term info. I even talked to my daughter about it. Anyway, I'm calling about ERJ, Edward Robert John. Would you buy this stock? It's in aerospace. I'd like ERJ. Would you buy it today? Okay, I'll look on the Internet. Thank you. Bye.
This is Embraer. This is a Brazilian manufacturer of aircraft for commercial and executive aviation and defense and security applications. Earnings supposed to grow 26% by the end of 2014 when they announced earnings. 2015 earnings supposed to go up 13%, but they lost money last quarter. This is the third quarter of 2014, lost 6 cents a share. The biggest issue here for me is the Brazilian real and the problems going on with Brazil. That kind of worries me the most. It's not expensive, but their cash flow is now negative. I don't really like that. Profitability, return on equity of 14% is in rising. I like that. That's good, but just a lot of it doesn't sit right with me. You know, I'm going to give it a neutral to positive. You know, I kind of like it because of the fact that it's in the aerospace industry. I like it because it's actually held up fairly well considering how weak the Brazilian market has been. It was making lower highs and lower lows, but it hasn't broken its October lows when the Brazilian market has clearly broke its October low. So relatively, it's doing fairly well. And I like that earnings are supposed to grow decently. And there's definitely space for them to grow as a company. It's only a $6 billion name. But if you look at the likes of Boeing, right, it's a $90 billion company, and they have tons of backlogs. And I think there's a lot of room for Embraer to do well. So I would give it to neutral positive. I don't love it. I don't hate it. I just kind of give it a neutral negative on the country that it's involved in, but positive on the sector that it's in and its relative strength. Right? Now before we close, I want to touch quickly on Apple. And, you know, it's the largest company in the world, the second biggest company by net income in the world, but it looks like their R&D spending is kind of lagging. It's not spending nearly as much as a percentage of revenue and as a percentage of expenses as companies like Facebook, Intel, Google, Microsoft. And it just looks like they're underspending in R&D relative to their peers and outspending them on stock purchases owing to pressure from the likes of investor Carl Icahn. And this is my problem. I don't like stock buybacks in theory. I like it when companies do it, especially when their stock is cheap. But usually they do it when it's expensive and things are going great. And they usually waste that money, and that money could be dry powder for, you know, bad times to reinvest in the business, make acquisitions. That's usually a more efficient use of their money. But when you have all these activists come in and they're basically forcing Apple to buy back shares, I don't think it's a terrible thing, especially because I think Apple still is relatively undervalued, but they should not be skimping on R&D to buy back shares, because long term they're going to get a much better return of their money from R&D and staying ahead of their competition than buying back shares. And you can see this from, you know, iPad shipments are declining, and I think the iPad's still great, but I don't think there's been a ton of innovation with the iPad. I think they could have done more with the iPad. And, you know, they have the iWatch, the Apple Watch coming out, but if that's not a big hit, then that could be an issue. So Apple, while they're buying back shares, that's nice. They should be keeping up with their competitors, and if not, spending more than their competitors on a relative basis on R&D, because that is really the lifeblood of a company long term. Now, before we close the hour, you're invited to use our risk analysis tool whenever you get a chance. It's free and it takes about 5 minutes to complete. Can be an eye-opener. Just look for the blue box on investtalk.com. I am portfolio manager Justin Klein, and for Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP Financial, thank you for listening, and let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.